This is Sophia Rifkin-Haas reading Absurdistan by Gary Steingart, pages 279 to 281. Wow, I said to myself, this is turning into one Sergeant Pepper's kind of day. I whistled a few bars of Lovely Rita. Maybe I was back in the United States already, but this time armed with a journalist's visa. Now I just needed to write everything down and file my story before the deadline. I wonder where the grown-ups are, anyway, I said to the palm tree. You can talk to me. I won't use your real name. The palm tree wasn't talking. Probably protecting the plane tree. I want girls, I said. And with the fair sex in mind, I started knocking on the heavy wooden doors around the courtyard. No one answered. I walked into one of the rooms and saw a dying middle-aged woman spread out over a golden duvet. It was my mother. Oh, poor girl, I said. Poor girl. I couldn't believe I was calling my mother a girl, but there it was, the feeling that she was younger than me and in need of my help. I cradled her face, trying to make out the familiar features, but her entire head was covered by a giant tube sock, two blue stripes around where her mouth should have been. Good, I said. You got the American socks. The search is over. My mother put her cool white fingers between my neck folds and made a quizzical sound through the tube sock. Last 18 years, I said. Many things happened. First, communism died. Then Papa got rich. We went to the Alps. I got circumcised. Something bad. Then they put Papa into the ground. A pretty Jewess brought gardenias. Then I ended up here. The alabaster hand wiped my mouth and skirted the edges of my lonely nose. A gust of sock air emerged out of my mother's neck and formed a series of inverted Cyrillic letters, like when Americans try to learn Russian. What? I said. Sure, I've got a girl. But she's nothing like you, Mommy. I mean, it's like you always said. You get what you pay for. My mother snorted her assent. I tried to cradle her head in my hands, remembering how, as a 5-year-old, I used to braid her hair while she napped, trying to make her look like a little girl whom I could cuddle and kiss with impunity. I noticed that her smells had changed and that there was a lustier, dirtier aroma about her, the scent of an unclean kitchen. And it wasn't a tube sock over her face, but rather an onion, beneath which an alien face hissed and contorted. She started speaking in a coarse southern tongue. A thin ribbon of hate flitted through my heart. Why didn't you protect me from him? The frying pan. Nothing made sense. Why did you feed me so much? Bowls of condensed milk for breakfast. Midnight snacks of raw pig fat spread over black bread, cold veal and mayonnaise salads in the hot afternoon, poppy seed cakes crowned with clotted cream, rounds of servilla smoked sausage and cheese squares atop slices of butter as thick as my thumbs. Why did you let me get so fat, Mommy? So that he wouldn't roll around with me anymore? So that he would stop loving me? I was all alone after you died. Saddened, I left the mysterious mother room. The sun burned me like an ant under a telescope. Tired of stalking the premises, I let the house do the walking. It pivoted around me, dozens of empty sunlit rooms flashing past, until I was standing by the front gate, nudging it open with two disembodied hands. I was free! I walked down the street. The two imbecilic boys assigned to me, Tafa and Rafa, were sitting in my Volvo station wagon soaking up precious air conditioning. I knocked on one of the windows. V or T? I shouted to the boys. Polite or familiar? Ugh, I ought to knock your heads together. To my surprise, my adjutants actually did have hairy brown coconuts on their shoulders. I ought to buy myself a hovercraft, I opined to them rather loudly. New technology, gonna invest in. The road followed a curvy downward path toward the sea, past the pretty Sivo houses with their carved balconies, their overgrown front gardens rustling with barberry shrubs and creamy milk flowers. I caught sight of a broken rose bush peering out of a chain-link fence and was swiftly dispossessed of all my fundamental worries. "It's like being back in Yalta," I shouted, "with my mamochka." The winds of that particular resort town with their Chekhovian overtones sideswiped my ass. I hopped and skipped down the road, not really possible, but so it seemed at the time, until I found myself at a kind of border crossing. Armed men in tight sweaters stitched with the word DIN Corp were blocking the path. I imagined what it would be like to try to tear the assault rifles out of their hands, hundreds of bullets piercing me. "Ouch! Ouch! Ouch!" 100 times over. "What you doing?" I asked them. "Protecting the neighborhood," they said in these South African-sounding accents. "From the looters. You live here?" "I'm Nana Nana Bragovna's boyfriend." "Really? What are you called?" "Fat Uncle Snack Daddy, Misha Vainberg. Call me what you like, but please let me get through." "Be careful out there, sir. These people have lost their senses." "That's the people for you." I pressed on toward a gallery of heat and sound. After a few solitary meters, I was accepted into a crowd of around 1 million persons, gang-pressed into the dust bowl of the Sibo Terrace. Hands burrowed into me, little hands, big hands, sea-wet hands, sun-dried hands. Everyone was looking for my wallet, but kept coming up with my balls. "They look and feel almost alike," I hinted to my friendly assailants. "Keep looking. Ooh, you're very warm. No, 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 I don't like tickling."